They change cultures. They're heat seekers. They run at adversity and embrace change. These are the Room Tilters.
Somebody who can change the temperature in a room when they walk in. Mm. And that's metaphorical for somebody who can influence those around them and make such an impact quickly, emphatically, and long-lasting, whether it be an organization, a team, a relationship, whatever it might be.
This is the Room Tilters podcast, presented by Limitless Minds. Co-hosts DJ Eitzen and Harry Wilson, founders of peak performance and leadership consulting company, Limitless Minds, explore how the best and brightest change the temperature in a room. From sports, the military, entertainment and media, clinical psychologists to CEOs, this podcast will navigate what it takes to think big and go far. And now, DJ and Harry.
All right, Trevor Moad.
Gentlemen.
We have you finally on the Room Tilters podcast.
What's up, Trev?
How you doing, guys?
Doing good.
We're in sunny Amelia Island here with Mead Johnson here at their national sales meeting, and so we figured we'd post up and get some time with you.
That's awesome.
So listen, we have a lot of listeners that may know who you are,
right,
following Limitless Minds or your trajectory. They may know that you worked with Russ, my brother,
yep,
and so, but I wanted to give them a little bit more, flavor on who you are and,
sure,
and whatnot. For the listeners, I met Trevor back in the 2012 time frame.
Era, yeah.
You were working at IMG as the VP of Performance.
Right, the Director of VP of Performance. IMG Academy's in Bradenton, Florida, which is about an hour southwest of Tampa. And it's really just this huge campus where athletes kind of go to live, train, and get better. And you train actually holistically in everything. So, there's physical training, and there's life skills training, and there's media training, and there's improv training, and there's mental conditioning and all those things. So I was the director of performance, mm-hmm, there, and I ran our NFL draft program. So I ran that really starting in about 2001. So Russ was my 12th draft class, and he was in the draft class. He came basically for people that whether you know a lot about football or not, imagine like an SAT prep course, like a Kaplan course,
yeah,
where you get this sophisticated training. Every NFL prospect goes someplace to get that type of training. So Russell, with Kirk Cousins, with Ryan Tannehill, with Bobby Wagner, Luke Kuechly, amongst Mohamed Sanu, a number of guys was in that class. And Russ was, really just one of the guys. He wasn't – we were going to have four or five first-round picks. Russ was not expected to be one of those. But his agent was a good friend of mine, Mark Rogers, who we all know well, Limitless Minds fan. That was kind of the process. I met Russell. I got a text from Chris Winkie, the quarterback, to go up front to meet Russ. And we met him, and that was the beginning of a pretty cool relationship.
Yeah, and so I remember in 2014 – before the Denver Broncos Super Bowl.
Yes.
Running into you at my brother's place that he was staying at.
Yep.
And kind of stealing my thunder a little bit relative to the pregame,
yep,
pep talk. But I noticed your interaction, and it was a lot about language and a lot about, your self-talk and his own inner belief.
Right.
Which Russell, mm-hmm, Russell's always had this, high,
sure,
level of inner belief. But I think that you've kind of been his... you're kind of his coach in that area.
Right.
That allows him to make that
put some science to what he was doing,
right,
anyways.
Right. Put some science, some process to it.
Yeah.
Structure.
Yeah, to make it more conscious, right? That conscious competence around,
yeah,
around his inner belief. So that's where and of course, he won that Super Bowl. I think the power in that, all that work in that process is in the next year.
Yeah.
When you lose the Super Bowl, throwing,
yeah,
the interception on the 1 yard line, that's where you start to see all that work activated, in my opinion. So I think it's, something really unique. I think the listeners are, going to get a couple snippets from you today.
Right.
And
we were with them the night before that game, too.
That's right.
So it's not about the victories and the losses. It's about the process and the system in place. So,
yeah,
one being in New York or the other being in Paradise Valley, which we talk about in the book,
mm-hmm,
that whole process, which you were a part of as well. So it's a psychological system. It's the belief that you can that you can influence and educate the mind in the same way you would do aerobics, you would,
right,
do an Orange Theory, or you do a fitness class. It's just a part of a system.
So tell us a little bit about kind of why you became a mental conditioning coach, or as Dan Patrick called you, the mentalist?
I think a mentalist, if you looked it up, it goes back to some sort of voodoo thing. And but, you know, it was interesting. Dan Patrick was a perfect example of just the lack of education around it. Right. I mean, I think if you were to say you are a strength coach, or, oh, you are a fitness trainer, people understand what that is. And then if you get, you know, a brain trainer or mental conditioning coach or life coach or sports psychology, I think maybe to some degree if you were, if you said motivational speaker, you know, which it's crazy that some people want that title, you know, because motivation is such a temporary process. And I think what we've built at Limitless Minds is much more of a conditioning system and structure, particularly those who get involved in the digital content. But yeah, that just nobody has any idea, you know. And when I went and did Dan Patrick last week, they just—I'm listening to them in advance of me coming out, and they're like intimidating themselves. What if he changes us?
What if all of a sudden you're hypnotized?
What, you know? And then you know, I walk out, and obviously it's nothing like that.
Yeah.
And it's such a confusing industry for the consumer too. You know, as an individual, what am I looking for? What should I expect? You know, and we deal with this, you know, truthfully in the business, right? New clients, what should I expect? What should I anticipate? Really, when our job is to give them an enjoyable system and then organically build them through the basic fundamentals of thinking. You know, I was thinking about our conversation a couple of days ago, and I was thinking about, you know, like it's incumbent upon us to know when a group's ready to advance, you know, conceptually. Whether we get 60 minutes, 90 minutes, 3 hours. That's why, you know, a lot of our leadership groups, one of the things we talk about from the start, and we think even going back to that, you know, the huge medical device company we did, is I'm not starting without 3.5 hours together with their top leadership guys and gals to give them a basic foundation so we have a starting point.
That's right.
So, I mean, you know, one thing I'm curious about, and I think some of our listeners may be, is how do you get to be a mindset coach, right?
Yeah.
Now, for you, you had a unique background that I would love for you to tell the listeners about, with your father, you know, having, you know, a really big impact and footprint in the space.
Right.
But then that doesn't mean you have to. My dad was a lawyer. Doesn't mean I'm going to be a lawyer.
Correct.
So tell us a little bit about that kind of trajectory and how you became, you know, the best of the best in the space.
You know, my dad was a longtime successful basketball coach, and that's what he did. You know, he was born in the early 40s, and you know, was a really good athlete, and went to a school up in Central Washington, which was Central Washington University, and he would play basketball and baseball and get a master's in PE, which was really sort of the degree you would get to go into coaching. So he was a longtime coach in sort of the Seattle, Washington area, and coached at a place called Central Kitsap, then Clover Park High School, and then, you know, had a coaching footprint of 17, 18 years.
State championship.
And won a state championship, went into the Hall of Fame, all those things. But he was influencing as a teacher, and it was interesting. I would feel sort of the same thing. He was a high school teacher and focused largely on English, but also taught math. But he started teaching these courses called Pep Talks. And PEP was short for Personal Enrichment Principles. And it kind of all went back to his master's degree thesis, like on democratic coaching, where players voted 1 through 12 for their lineup. And wherever you pick somebody 1 through 12, the least amount of your score, you ended up being in the top five, you ended up being a starter. So it was really interesting that, you know, what he was doing. And he'd been sort of challenged by some of the teachers and some of the people, and he would do these after school, and he would do these on the weekend, and, you know, $15, come get, you know, do a 2-hour seminar with Bob Moad and the coach Moad. And then he set a goal in the mid 70s, I think 74, where, all right, I'm going to leave teaching and I'm going to speak to 100,000 students in high school assemblies around the state of Washington and the Northwest. And then I will charge a fee in advance for that. And then, so that's kind of what he did. He left the structure of teaching. He had a job offer at the University of Utah to be the second assistant coach and go get some additional education. And he told me he knew that he was not married to a coach's wife. And that my mom wouldn't be, and I think he would have been a Pat Riley type coach had he, you know, 32 made that step into Division One,
right?
Pac-10 coaching, but he, you know, he didn't take that jump, and he started his early programs for Unlocking Your Potential, and just a great speaker. He used piano and all the things, and so 19, really the mid 70s is when he started, and he was teaching right up until he passed in 2007. Mm.
So he wrote a book or co-authored some books, mm-hmm. correct? And you obviously have your book. Excited about that? You excited about that?
I'm excited just because it's 12 chapters. I think it's really comprehensive. Mm-hmm. You know, the process of how do you sell it has been an interesting one because it's kind of like what we're doing here. You know, how do you take your brand beyond a small subset of people that know you?
Right.
Sports is huge. And it's also really small. It's mm-hmm. kind of a small inner community. So if you're a head coach or you're a player, people know you. Mm-hmm. But there's so many people that work behind the scenes to make an athlete tick.
Yeah.
You know, from the athletic trainers to the doctors to the operations coordinators to all those things. And I've lived largely in that world for 18 years.
Yeah.
Being how do you get people aware? I should go buy the book.
Right.
And your brother, Russell, helps when his name is right on the top. Yeah. People said, hey, do you have a problem with you're the guy writing the foreword being the headline of the book? I said, thank God he is.
What are some of the things, obviously I read the book, that you want the readers to get out of the book? What should they expect?
You know, number one, I wanted the people to understand that I was not going to write the book from a superhero perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the people that work in the self-help industry, I think, for whatever the reason, are sort of given this era aura of infallibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as if they don't live these principles, or they don't have to, or they don't struggle. And so early on from the book, from the first couple pages, you know, I go into some, you know, unique personal challenges that I was going through in my own life. And I wanted, and I'm working with all these athletes in all these huge moments, and they're all fine, and I'm the one that needs help.
That's interesting.
And that is interesting. You know, and Jimbo Fisher, the head coach now at Texas A&M, ends up sort of coaching me through a really difficult moment.
Wow.
And so, I wanted them to understand, because I think that's the greatest gift that I have is being a partner, like living the principles,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, which we all know I'm doing now for sure. Secondly, I think I want to demystify it. You know, I didn't want it to be complicated.
Right.
I'm a big, you know, believer in you don't need to have 8 degrees from Harvard. And, mm-hmm. and I think that the consumers are, you know, oh, wow, it's a Harvard educated professor. So what?
Right.
Does it good? Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. Is it a good program? Is it battle tested?
Yep.
Have other people done it for years?
Yeah.
And then I think third, just kind of comprehensive. I think it was the easier content. Where we're, which you guys know, I go through painstaking educational teaching, looking at every member of an audience today. Are they getting this?
Yep.
The power of their own language, what they say to themselves versus what they say outside, what other people say to them. And I won't advance a group until I feel comfortable that they've got that. But we do. We advance way beyond that. We advance the visualization to imagery.
Yep.
To progressive muscle relaxation, to self-talk, to changing from the inside out, which is developing an ad campaign, all those things. But we don't get there until we go through neutral thinking, the difference between negative and positive,
yeah.
you know, and all those things, which hopefully we're kind of going to give people a taste of,
mm-hmm.
but they can learn more about us.
Two things. One's a statement. I don't think we've said the title of the book for some reason.
Yes.
It's not just called The Book. It's
yeah,
called
the
It
book.
Takes What It Takes.
It Takes What It Takes.
It Takes What It Takes is what it's called. That's the product. The other one's a question is, why the hell did it take so long for you to write this book?
Yeah. It's funny because my dad's really first sort of big book didn't come out. He wrote a lot of small quote books and then been a part of Chicken Soup for the Soul. But until, you know, months before he passed, you know, in his late 60s. So, a lot of it is because when you work with people like Russell, you know, in the same way that for you guys as top-level guys in the pharmaceutical world, there are certain things like, hey, there's no cameras in this room,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, there's so there was always this natural fear and this unspoken word like, hey, man, to know the things that you know, it needs to stay in this room.
Right.
So a lot of offers early on, hey, you want to do this TV show? I remember, you know, NBC came, hey, we want to follow you with the Jacksonville Jaguars, kind of like the Trevor Moad show and all these things. And I said, listen, that's a great idea. And number one, they're never going to let you do that. Mm-hmm. You know, they found out about, God, you're helping all these athletes, you're doing all these things. I'm like, there's some basic level where we could do some education around the draft, but you know, I can't bring you into that conversation.
Right.
So I think in the beginning, I worried about, like, what would I say
right.
if it wasn't, you know, gotcha things about athletes. Mm-hmm. And then I think as I got older, I realized that I've got a lot to say without that. And then if I use, you know, utilize the athletes' specific moments that are already public, you know, where we've seen them, the Super Bowl, an interception, a touchdown, or our career's over. And then a lot of the athletes are really open to, hey, I want to talk about the
right.
influence that you had and what we were doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being here in Jacksonville, like Fred Taylor, I think one of the better chapters in the book is the one where we go through the his career.
Yep.
Another thing about the timing, in my opinion, relative to, you know, why now, and, you know, and obviously being a co-founder and a friend and somebody we've known for a decade now, is I think that what we're seeing commercially from a broader consumer perspective and where individuals are, where our country is a real opportunity to talk about mindset.
Yes.
I think that there's a hunger for it. I think there's an appetite from apps like Headspace and Calm, what we're building. I think I saw a stat recently that's like in 2025, 75% of our workforce is going to be millennials and looking for something more than just technical, you know, sales training for their job.
And they want it simple.
Yes.
They want it demystified, like you
yes.
said, and they want something that's sticky. And I think that's what has resonated with the audiences that we've been able to get in front of with you. And I think that's what has ultimately tilted the room. And,
yeah.
you know, you being a room tilter and working with a lot of room tilters, I know Harry had a question about a recent room tilter that we lost. So I was going to let you go ahead and take that.
I think that Kobe is the ultimate room tilter.
Yeah.
He's, you know, somebody who has now, and you kind of see this after he's gone.
Yeah.
You know, the response to, you know, everybody has their own Kobe story. And he's the type that when he walks into a room, it's not because he's, you know, 6'6", you know, 230 pounds that,
right.
that the room tilts. It's because of a certain a level of self-confidence,
yep.
a certain level of like this aura that he has. You've met Kobe.
Yep.
You met him in the last year or so, right?
Right. First of all, it was powerful for me in the sense that, you know, I'm 4.5 years older than Kobe. I mean, he's a contemporary of me when I was coming out of high school, college.
Right.
You know, my early years where I still really loved basketball, he was... You know, I was a huge Seattle Supersonics fan before your brother came and turned the Seattle sideways on its head and made them SEC crazy football fans. It was a Sonic town.
Yeah.
You know, so I was a huge NBA fan. And then also, you know, early on as a member of Adidas, Kobe would train at IMG Academy. So we had a lot of, you know, context in him. But the conversation started... early on, this thing that was called Sports Club LA would end up becoming the Mamba Sports Academy. And Chad Faulkner, who was the founder of it, was a good friend of Russell. And they'd done some projects together. And then he came down when we were filming Quarterback to Quarterback. And Quarterback to Quarterback was the ESPN show really built around mindset
yeah.
and education. And I really think eventually we'll end up with something like that for our company. You know, where we have a platform like that to work with people and teach this framework. You know, he said Limitless Minds, which at that point was kind of in its infancy, where I think now we're starting to build that momentum. And probably get to the point where for the audience that's listening now, where we'll start to do some open events.
Yeah.
We may need some headliners like Russ and Sierra in the beginning to draw. But, you know, because I get asked, the Dramas podcast, you know, from Young and Reckless, the brand came out last night at midnight, and I've got all these notes. People have listened to it 3 times.
Wow.
You know, we clearly have a following. You know, some former college athlete yesterday at our event in Kentucky came and said, you know, I played basketball at the University of Texas, Tyler, and my coach taught, you know, all your content all 4 years of my career. So
I
was like, really?
Right.
You know, and you know, they'd been using YouTube things and all sorts of elements. But the idea was Limitless Minds and the Mamba Sports Academy, there could be a synergy. So really, in all my years, I had been around Kobe before and met him in passing, but and worked in the NBA multiple times. But I've never really been able to resonate in the NBA. The NBA personality is a different one. They come from a very similar background, both the coaches and the players, to the NFL.
Right.
But it's a very different culture, you know, and one that is a lot less blue collar, lot more about style.
Yeah.
And just a different, you know, just a different league. So I went into this meeting, and I was just really excited because Kobe is a room tilter, and for your audience, that's just somebody where you walk in and you're like, whoa, I can feel that dude, and or dudette, right? Mm-hmm. Because I've been the most significant room tilter I've ever met in my life is Maria Shriver, who walked in and the room, you know, did a 180, and I was, you know, like in Matrix, like Neo dodging bullets.
Yeah.
And so... Yeah, and it was just awesome. You know, basically I got an hour, and I walked in, there were like 11 people in the room, including two people that do exactly what we do.
Right.
So I knew that this was going to be the only meeting we had, because I knew that they probably, if they let us get a foot in the door, we would take their job, because our content's just better, you know. So I just wanted to soak it up. So really I had 42 minutes where I sort of gave them one of like our manuals that we have that's not consumer facing yet, but one that we're using at Georgia, and immediately kind of went to it. And he looked at 7 pages, and over the course of the first 42 minutes, I watched what pages he stopped on, noting why did he stop on that? And I noticed that he only stopped on 7 of 120 pages, but he was kind of looking through it. And then he just really, they gave me a platform to talk about neutral thinking, what Limitless Minds was. He gave me his opinions on Russell. You know, Russell and him are acquaintances. But obviously have a mutual respect like the sports world has. And I think the business world has. And then for 18 minutes he spoke to end the meeting. Every minute I remembered, I got into my car and I just typed up a bunch of notes. You know, and it reminded me of this, the first time Jason Garrett, you know, the Cowboys coach and now with the Giants, met Tiger Woods. He said for 3 hours he spoke, and Jason's been a longtime friend. He spoke to Tiger at a U2 concert.
Yeah.
I just sat in the back. It was in Cowboy Stadium. And then Jason got home that night and typed up 10 pages of notes from meeting Tiger and sent them to this group of 15 of us.
Wow.
All the notes from spending time around Tiger. And it kind of felt like that, except for I only had, you know, 18 minutes. But he was just incredibly impactful. He was insightful. He was intelligent. He was well-rounded. He was a big thinker. He had strong opinions based on his education. He wasn't going to give you opinions where he wasn't. He had a really interesting respect for the idea of neutral, how he'd come to it. He had been to the University of Alabama just a month earlier to speak during training camp. So he'd been with Coach Saban and talked to all of the players and spent time around Nick. So it was just I feel very grateful.
Yeah.
I feel for Chad because it was such a cool partnership. And I don't think I knew, you know, a lot of people in the pro world partner in almost like a licensing agreement. This guy was there all the time, you know, and I knew that he was really invested in his kids, as you are, DJ, and Harrison is. And I've sort of raised kind of a different group as an educator, raised other people's kids in all my years at IMG, but don't have kids myself. But the one thing that made me want to get involved with the Sports Academy was knowing that all three of his daughters were involved.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, that they did have volleyball.
Yeah.
They had, four of his daughters, but at that point, he had just had a new daughter. So, I knew he would be involved, and I thought, man, if you could take the way Russ thinks and Kobe thinks, and you could simplify it, take it to the world, because the Mamba mentality is not like it takes what it takes. It does have some of his core concepts, but it's a picture book. It's kind of a breakdown of the way he thinks. It Takes What It Takes is really a manual for this is what we've been doing for 18 years. This is what we're teaching. But what I love about it is it goes to the more sophisticated. In the 18 minutes, I only got to talk about basic things. But what he did share with me was awesome. Just, this is the best way. How are you educating the top college professional athletes? I like that.
Right.
This could be another level of where you could take that based upon what I've done.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he said. And he told me how he facilitates education, what he thinks is the most impactful way for people to remember. And it was kind of something I keep to myself.
Yeah.
But but it was just awesome.
Yeah, you know, I think in closing, you know, we've been kind of, you know, we've been going on this journey discussing what room tilting means, and our listeners will hear more and more episodes from different guests that we have that that kind of lay that out from that perspective. But, you know, I think in Kobe's passing, one thing I reflect on is often we don't really take stock of who those individuals are until they're gone.
Yes. Right?
And I think you, for in Kobe's case, you kind of quickly realize the weight of his ability to tilt a room when he's gone. Right.
Well, how blessed I was, I mean, telling you guys that I got to go do the meeting and just sitting in my car and taking the notes, like, I knew exactly how. Now, fortunately, when you study so many elite performers, as we've done to build this business across so many levels, from Joseph Tsai to Tim Cook to Usain Bolt to Kobe Bryant, right? I've used him so many times in videos. Mm-hmm. I never get in awe of athletes, you know, but I was kind of like, I'm in this room and I hope I catch some of what he has.
Well, I think that with Kobe, it's more than, obviously, he's one of the best ever, you know. You can. I know there's always debates on First Take and otherwise. He's the best, but one of the best ever. And for some of the players that are playing now, and you saw their emotion on some of the highlights and everything. That was their Michael Jordan. That's who they grew up watching. Some of these guys are Luka, right?
Yeah.
For the Mavericks, he's 20 years old.
Yeah.
So all he's known is Kobe, as far as the greats, and LeBron, right? And now he's one of them, right? But, but it's interesting. So I mean, that's their person. That's their guy. That's their hero. And so.
I'm watching it last night. I had no idea.
Right. So much more than just being an athlete for Kobe. And it's what's so sad is he was just turning the page so that everybody could kind of get a glimpse of all of the things. You know, a lot of people kind of heard that he spoke different languages. Now you're seeing him as they
speak Italian.
It's wild, right? And so anyway, thank you for being on.
You bet. Thanks, man.
Remind folks before we push stop here, remind folks where they can get the book, when it comes out, what's the
deal. Well, first of all, let me just wrap on Kobe. I would say the one thing that I do feel grateful for is all 41 and a half years of his life, he lived them.
Yeah.
And he made them count. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he would be leaving with regret. You know, and as somebody that does some work with the Clippers, he maximized his potential.
Mm-hmm.
Potential is just unused success. Mm-hmm. Kobe used what he had. Your brother uses what he has. That's one of our biggest challenges to the audience. Are you using, maybe you're 5'8", and maybe you don't have the same gifts that a coworker has, but are you using the gifts that you do have?
Right.
You know, so many times we measure ourselves with who we think we're not. You know, but it takes what it takes is people could go now to thinkbig-gofar.com/book. That's our website. But if you type It Takes What It Takes, Trevor Mowat, it's on Audible, it's on Amazon, it's on I really should just ask DJ since he reads. He's got he's got a book of the day club.
That's right.
Which is awesome, but I'm kind of fired up, A, that you read it, that you liked it. I think it's just a good perspective, and I think it also shows people when they start thinking about, you know, me as an individual, us as a business, mm-hmm. me as a you know, someone that works with sports teams, that there's a lot of depth.
Yeah.
And I think that when people get It Takes What It Takes, you know, how to gain how to think neutrally and gain control of your life.
So thanks for joining us, man. Yeah. Everybody go get the book. Now it's pre-ordered, but it's coming out officially like next week. So
February 4th. Yeah, it's awesome.
We'll see you next time. And remember, you don't have to be sick to get better.
You've been listening to the Room Tilters podcast, hosted by DJ Eitzen and Harry Wilson, presented by Limitless Minds.